Yeah, warm welcome from us as well to the talk today, Ecocide and Green Colonialism in Sapmi, where we're going to talk about water power plants and different promises in that region. Quick question, who has heard about Sapmi or the Sami people? That's a lot of people. Very happy to hear, see that. And we're happy that you're here today and all the others as well who were willing to or eager to learn something about us. In the May of this year, the Sapmi tour took place in order to make this topic visible and raise awareness. With Per Andersson was visiting, and he's activist in the Swedish part of Sapmi, and he was talking about the problems and situation there. We are Kim and Maurice, both not from Sapmi. We are just here for the info tour. In this talk today, we're going to focus on a small introduction to the data centers in North Europe, which are being built and planned. In order to understand this better, we are going to have a short excursion into the history of Sapmi, also look into the green transition that's happening in Sweden, the Green Valley, in order to give you a short overview of that, and then have a view into the future. Yeah, thanks, and hi from me as well. I'm talking about the data center part a bit, and we're looking at some press clippings to begin, because I looked into this topic and I've kept coming across topics in the news about this, and the first one was in 2013 when Facebook did a data center in Luleå in the north of Sweden, just above the polar circle in the region we're talking about today, and they opened a big data center there, the first one in the European continent from Facebook, and the biggest one in Europe. And this year we had TikTok, that they are also making a data center in the north.
Then AWS, Amazon Cloud Service, who also freshly opened a so-called cloud region in Stockholm, and also Volkswagen want to build data centers in Sapmi. They are also very dependent on cloud computing, or as they call it, green computing. As an example, I will talk about the data center in Luleå, which calls itself the biggest one in Europe, although that's difficult to measure. It's complicated to get clear numbers on. What's interesting there, we know it's a million credit meters big. It has it's had over 3 million servers, over 150 staff members, 8 billion Swedish krones, which are estimatedly 700 millions of euros. And this does not include what private companies have paid for energy infrastructure. Over there. We don't have any data about the energy consumption, unfortunately, which seems a bit suspect to us, but Mark Zuckerberg says it's about a dozen hydroelectric plants which produce energy exclusively for this data center. In the European context, I would like to draw attention that there is raising resistance against data centers anywhere in Europe. There has been some in Brandenburg, Germany, for example. In the Netherlands, a moratorium for new data centers has been put in place for 9 months. In Ireland, 14% of the data consumption is from data centers. I do not want to judge those protests, but just make visible that on one hand we use cloud services, on the other hand there are physical places where these cloud centers are being built and bring problems with them. Although I'm not very much into the those struggles. And in Northern Europe specifically, I would like to talk about what are the different Location factors for those data centers, of course, we have internet. In Sweden, you have a ping of about 20 milliseconds from Stockholm to the ISP in Frankfurt. Energy has a strong infrastructure, especially in the north of Sweden or Sápmi. The network is built quite strongly over there. And we have land given by the Swedish state to build wind turbines, and nowadays data centers pay the same tax rate on energy, such as, for example, on steel. So now it's 5 cents per kilowatt hour, which a data center has to pay. While in Germany, it's 10 cents only in taxes. Then you have cooling as a factor, but where you have minus 20 degrees in the winter, that's a location factor too, of course. And additionally, there's another factor, which is regulation and political will, which is often forgotten, because both internet doesn't grow in trees, but is planned somewhere and built some, and the infrastructure is built somehow, which is not random. Also energy. Of course, cooling, you may think that's only a natural resource you don't have somewhere else in Europe, but I would say it's a human-made component, because that we only need such a mega those mega data centers, instead of having a different concept on this, also has to do with the landscape of the internet in general. And also, when talking about regulation, you need to take into account that Sweden has a state-owned marketing agency, which is making it easy for smaller companies where you come with your servers, do kind of plug and play and just start. And of course, that's a factor too for medium-sized companies. Now let's have a look on a closer look on how this affects the people on the ground actually living there. And I will give to Marcus for this part.
Okay, so the question is, what is the situation in Sápmi? And we have heard from Lea about the data centers. We have here a quote from Mark Zuckerberg. A dozen hydroelectric plants operate on nearby rivers, providing a reliable and renewable power source. And there are wind parks planned here too. And what influence do they have here in Sápmi? Are these energies as green and sustainable as we would hope for? And we want to ask more critical questions: how important they really are. What are the implications for people that live there? But before we start with that, we want to quickly talk about Sápmi and the region in which the Sami live. This is a region in North Europe. It reaches from the north of Sweden over Norway to even Russia, and it encompasses different languages that have been found there. And people have lived there for a long time, and we should have this in the back of our mind, that these people are not distinguishable by our current borders. There lived different populations that do a lot of reindeer guarding and guard the forests as well. It's a much more diverse culture than is perceived often. And we want to talk about the history. So before the Sami have lived in quotas in a semi-nomadic way, where the reindeer could be kept in their natural environment, and in the 16th century the herd of reindeer became larger, and in the 17th century silver mines and colonization were added, and the Sami became sedentary. But it brought the problems of racism, exploitation, of the people and the area, and the culture was prohibited. It's absurd how similar this exploitation is to other cultural exploitation. There are great parallels between this this exploitation to the one that is seen in North America, and you can really, it's a good idea to read up on that.
So let's take a closer look on what currently the problematic, or the focus of the problems is, and that's the extractivism with Sami land, or the exploitation of their land, and how this huge human intrusion into nature works and what it means. Of course, you may think that there's lots of untouched nature in northern Scandinavia, but there is no such thing as untouched nature in North Scandinavia. It's not untouched. Every hill and every river has a name, and of course there's lots going on. And first of all, you have mines, you have huge land mines, huge mines, for example, iron and silver is being exploited. Then you have, of course, wood factories, you have railroads, you have roads, railroads, more and more huge huge wind farms, then you have dams, which led to flooding of settlements and spiritual locations. And those dams create energy for the, for example, for data centers. So, because of course, and since of course settlements are being built next to rivers, this quickly leads to flooding. Then reindeer generally follow the same routes, but this means that when rivers grow massively due to the dams, the reindeer will still try to cross them at the same locations, and this often leads to them drowning in the floods, and sometimes Sami people trying to save the reindeers drowning in the floods too and dying. Starting in 1979, there has been a huge resistance against the dam project in the town called Alta, which led to more awareness for human rights, even though the resistance didn't succeed ultimately and the dam was built. Also, considering that, even considering the huge intrusion into nature that the dams bring with them, their energy efficiency is actually quite bad. One more thing you can see in Sweden is when you get away from touristic places where it's green and you have huge woods, you will just see a lot of forest devastation. And so only 3 to 4% are actually primeval forests, while most is just plantations. So the plantations have different kinds of trees than which used to grow there naturally, because they grow faster and therefore they bring more wood and more profit. And this leads to lichens, for example, or mushrooms disappearing. And as these used to be crucial for reindeers, now they lack nutrition. And then you have groups finding out that you have 120 different lichens and mushrooms in primeval forests, but plantations only have about 20. One more thing we already had is mines targeting or exploiting iron and silver, which is used a lot for so-called e-mobility or green steel. Especially iron is being mostly exported. If you have different minerals, they may get into the groundwater, which has negative consequences for quality of life. Right now we have a planned iron mine in Gallag, and there's lots of resistance since 2013. Also, the Sami community has put in a so-called veto, or is trying to push a lawsuit against this project. So in a few years, it's worth taking a look over there. Then we have wind farms. You can see the dots on the maps. All of these are wind farms planned to be built. And generally, we think very positively about wind farms, but different from here. There you have 300 meter high windmills, leading to lots of industrialization of areas, and the migration of reindeers is harmed, because the because pasture lands of reindeers disappear. And there is no official voice for the local community, no right to have a talk in there. Now we will play an audio.
Alberi at this windmill. We fight against it 11 years, and we lose in everything that we can in the court system. We have one chance more to go to European court. The only problem is that it costs 500,000 euro at least. And we are 4 Reiner herders. It's pretty. We need to have a big lotto winning if we will manage to do that. So I think that possibility, we can try to fix this money, but it feels impossible. But that's the only thing we have left that we can do. Or else it's demonstrations. And we have demonstrated already from beginning. We have tried every step that is possible. We have tried to going through all the courts. And now it have going 11 years. And we still continue fighting. It's a fight that continue, and I think it will be happen things very soon there, because it's coming closer and closer. It's the same as Skullock. That is smaller companies, that it's not government owned companies at least. And I think it's easier to fight against, I mean, the retirement people in your country not can be want to kill our culture if they know it. So then it's only our problem to get them to know it, what they're doing. And I think it's the Skullock is also a smaller company that is easier when it's stockholders and things, if you can doing. And I think in Skullock the real big fight will be, because there it will be, it's so well known, and it's, you know, they have great down there in their back. They have, you know, all this youth organization is really focused on this fight. So it will be, if we're not winning that fight, we will never ever winning anything anymore. It's like, yeah, but all the Sami people is together there. All the environment organization is together there. It's like everyone is together in that fight. There's so many people there, so it will be impossible for police and things like that. I mean, it maybe if it's coming 10,000 people or something, what they will do? It's like the police station in Jokkmokk have two places. It's there, it will be the big, I think, to see what it's, I think there it will be a change also by the laws, because it's need to be a change. And I always speak about, it must be a veto for the Sami people. Then we're there also to say yes to something. But as it now, we're not there to say yes to anything. We need to say no to everything, because it's always coming more and more and more and more. If we know we have a veto, then we can, you know, start to figure out how to, where, as your question was to Annie, but what to do. But for now, we not can do anything else than stop everything. If we have the veto, so we know that we can save the heart of our lands, then maybe we can cut off a finger in some other part. But you not can, when you not know what happened and you not are sure how the land will look like, you have no chance to say yes to anything. You need to fight everything.
Yeah, and in order to give a comment on that, in different areas other local solutions are possible, and sometimes it's not only there, but it's about critically questioning these things. The wind parks have a giant amount of power that they're generating, and one can ask, what is this power needed for? Because not so many people are living there. Thus, it's not like there's so many households active up there. So it is feasible that it's mostly for industry use. And the Swedish government is planning to the resort called Green Transition to put lots of industry and gigafactories in this Green Valley, which is a synonym for like Silicon Valley, but it's a pilot project over there. And what remains is that all the territorial claims are upheld. This also brings us back to the data center question. All the energy that is supposed to be renewable and sustainable out there, they are based on the exploitation of the Sami people over there. We're gonna play a second video now from an activist, Pauliana, that they're also active in that area.
Okay, so the Green Valley, that's been a new name for the north of Sweden or for Sapmi. And it's a reference to the Silicon Valley, of course. And this is because north of Sweden is not only special for me because I live there. It's like, it's a unique place. What's happening there right now is very important for the whole of Europe. Is this what they call the green transition? And they call it the Swedish model because it's kind of the first experiment on a bigger scale to try to implement this green transition with green factories and to make green steel and electric cars and all these kind of things. First, I will talk about the new factories because they're building like 4, 5, 6, I'm not sure how many, probably more, really big mega factories in the north of Sweden. Here's a few examples. One is Northvolt, where they want to make lithium batteries for electric cars mainly and for other vehicles. Green Steel, where they want to make steel without using coal and instead use hydrogen gas. And then there's a few others. And what's interesting about these factories is that they will use so much electricity. It's estimated that if you take the whole energy consumption of Sweden, if you say that the whole of Sweden now is eating one apple, these factories, only these factories, will eat almost an apple in themselves. So that means that they would double the amount of energy that Sweden has to use, which is quite much. And this is not everything, this is just the factories. Then the plan is also they want to do the electrification of everything. They want to basically electrify everything. Cars, machinery, mines, you name it, airplanes. So they are estimating that just within the coming 10 years or 15 years, the energy consumption in Sweden will maybe triple or even fourfold. It's a huge increase in the need for electricity.
Okay. So we'll come to the final conclusion and look ahead a bit. What are our conclusions in this regard? The first thing, the quote I have from the first Congress I attended, there's no technical solution for social problems. What I mean by this is a couple of hundred years ago, Europeans ventured out into the world and discovered new, in parentheses, places that have been inherited before by other people, obviously, and they were convinced that they can do whatever they want with nature, which was untouched, and that nature had no value in of its own, and that their own culture and values were more valuable than those of the people that have been living there before for a long time. So they have suppressed and suppressed the people there, and are doing this until now. And in the aftermath of this destruction, we have a climate catastrophe nowadays, which is so dramatic that even us in the middle of Europe can no longer ignore it, and we can no longer go there and with the same mindset that created this.
And Northern Europe is just one example for the colonialism that is conducted in the name of green change. And where invaders come and say, can we please extinct the way that you live and exploit you because we have a certain way of living that we want to live. Instead, we propose that we should listen to indigenous people and to their view on things. You can watch on videos, you can see these fights in all kinds of ways. And with these indigenous perspectives, we tell you to question these seeming solutions. We are presented with solutions that really only serve the great and the big companies. And it's easy to accept them because the other possibility is a lot of work that we have to do for a sustainable future.
um diese Lösung kritisch zu hinterfragen. Eins, das denke ich auf dem Kongress hier schon ein bisschen offene Türen einrennen, sind dabei, dass wir dezentrale Infrastrukturen
brauchen. We need decentralized infrastructures. I know that on the Congress we're basically teaching to the choir. And we need the marginalized perspectives, not only from indigenous people, but from other marginalized groups, and we need to respect and account for them in the process of coming up with these technologies. And in the last instance, this means we, as the people who work with technical solutions, we need to take responsibility also for the colonial way of thinking that we've been taught, and realizing that the concept of wilderness is not what we think. We could build wind farms here in Germany, and but we think that at our rivers there live people, but that's a colonial way of thinking. In the north there have also people lived forever at the rivers, and we should respect that in our day-to-day lives, and respect this in the solutions that we come up with. We like to give you a bit of literature for this, so there is the book which you can get at our from us for a donation, which is also available as a PDF, and more read up on the second URL, and a third URL to give you more literature to read up on the topic.
Das war's dann schon von unserer Seite.
So that's what we wanted to tell you. Thank you for your attention.
And now we have time for some questions. Yeah, thanks a lot, Morris and Kim, for this talk about SubMe. So I will ask the Signal Angels whether there is a question from the internet. Alternatively, no questions. Alternatively, we can make you aware on this short Q&A here. Later on in the Bits and Bäume cluster, there will be a question and answer sessions with Hendrik, the person who we are collaborating with on the ground. It did not really feel like it was a good idea to incorporate to the talk, so if you have questions to him directly, you can come to the talk afterwards. Yeah, so the first talk that upgrades the question and answer session by themselves. Questions from microphone number 3, please. Yeah, thank you for the presentation. Very interesting. My first question is, what time is the Q&A at Bits and Bäume? Because I'd like to attend that. And was it there a concrete ask from the Sami of what other people in other countries can do, something concrete? In regards to the data centers, is there some technical solutions that you need less data centers, maybe?
At
18:20, the Q&A in the Bits and Trees function is. And what we've been told is that we need to make it visible, that people know where this issue comes from. Germany is a country that profits from the export to Sweden, and we want to make these connections visible and ask critical questions about this. But also we want to highlight that in the Netherlands the retirement funds are supporting the wind farms, and there are many parallels in the ways that these mechanisms work, and we want to highlight what is allowed here. And in the data centers, we want to ask what kind of data is even stored there. There are a lot of user data for TikTok and other services, and we really want to ask who uses that and who needs this there.
So, the internet has thought about a question.
Organized Q&A will be streamed.
I don't know. I don't think so, actually.
Is it? No, okay. We don't think that our self-organized Q&A is going to be streamed.
Okay, microphone 4, bitte.
Hi, cool talk. Thank you very much. I have one question. I think that most data centers need a lot of server space, especially for AI development. How? So, I think we need more data centers, but how do you think can we do this? How? What could be a solution to maybe build more data centers? In while considering your talk.
Well, we have no right to build data centers on land that we don't own and that other people need to keep their culture alive and their way of living. And we cannot do that, no matter how much we think we need it. And I would also really ask how much we do need that for AI. Just because someone wants to experiment with AI data and do another model, it could be a solution to just ask whether we really need this and to come up with own solutions. But one solution that I personally feel is good, we really need, we don't need so much availability for the training of models. For example, when in Schleswig-Holstein there is a storm, maybe we could need data more to the point.
That's one spontaneous idea. Maybe other people have better ideas in this room. Then, microphone number 2, please. So, my apologies for speaking English. My German is quite limited. I'm from Finland. I don't live in Lapland, but I'm there every year. It must be noted that there are no data center issues in Finnish Lapland, but mines and electricity is an issue, of course. The situation is, of course,
against mines. It turns out that quite often the Sami people themselves are not exactly sort of the same opinion, all of them, and quite often majority of them turns out to be supporting mines, for example, in order to get economic benefits. And likewise for electricity, their main issue is to make sure that they get their share of the money it produces, not so much. Of course, even those, some of them
fight for them.
Traditional
lifestyle.
Electricity. Electrification of everything.
Electrification of everything.
At the moment, Lapland runs on diesel.
At the moment, Lapland runs on diesel, and that's not good either. And if we could electrify the cars, that would be a major effort to begin with. I don't really have a good question or a good answer, but I think that things are more complicated than they seem to be. I'm not sure what you want to do there out there. I can understand that opposition to unnecessary electricity, but some of it's useful.
And I hate the vines coming up.
But
I see their point of view.
I also see their point of view and support their point of view, because people are living out there off the land. It doesn't really work.
Reindeer herding
is way out of hand. There are too many reindeer there. You have to feed them by artificial means, and
so
I didn't ask anything, but thank
you're
you.
Probably well invited to join the
but you're well invited to join the Q&A session later on.
Is there anything more?
Is there anything?
Sorry.
There's a lot to unpack. And well, there's a lot to unpack. And I would like to do in German. So the last thing that I wanted to say is, yeah, the reindeer have to be fed additionally. But that is also because we have also almost 90% of clear cut, and the icy land cannot feed the reindeer if it doesn't have lichen anymore. And that's so it's not that the reindeer farming is not sustainable, it's that the region was exploited and the climate change has added to this problem. The Sami community that is apparently divided on this topic. Well, we have a strong colonization. The different countries have used different means of power to suppress the Sami. And we can see that companies in Sweden come and say, well, we have so many jobs for you, but when they have convinced the whole population except the Sami, they go to the Sami and say, hey, what do you think? Do you think we can do that? And the Sami are put under artificial pressure to accept this and are always less thought. So the division in the Sami community is artificially created by the companies. And I also want to say that in Halleberg and the wind farm, there's they offered a lot of money, and Hendrik refused the offer and didn't want the heart of the country devastated that he wanted to leave their children. And so I think it's relative. It's not a one-dimensional question. It has more dimensions because of the colonization that has taken place. Well, thank you for adding this point. We're at the end of our time for this slot, but as you've heard, you can go to the Bits and Bäume community place and go to the Q&A.
Thanks for listening to the English translation of Ecocide and Green Collective.